Welcome to Faye's Knowledge. If you're interested in learning about business, marketing, and personal development, this podcast is just for you. And I say it's just for you because in order to fail, we have to be willing to try. And once you try to do things for yourself, now you're learning and gaining the experience for yourself, which turns into knowledge. So this is the right podcast for you if you're looking for business, marketing, and personal development information, because now you have a chance to learn from others that have been through what you're currently going through or currently having experience, and this is the place for you to grow and develop to help become the best version of yourself. Subscribe to this podcast, and if you really enjoyed towards the end, leave a comment on your biggest takeaway from this specific episode, so that way we can deliver more content, more audio, more videos that can not only help you in your journey but can help propel you. And by propel, I'm actually saying that can help grow and push you forward in your journey. Again, welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe and wait towards the end and leave a comment about this specific video, your biggest takeaway from this.
I got into recruiting by accident. I didn't realize that was a test at the time, and I failed that test. So I had dreams when I knew that the Air Force wasn't going to work out. I thought, hey, you know what? I'm going to pour everything into football. The message is how to get to where you want to go. But in order for there to be a good match, I have to know what you want, and I have to know that I can help you get there.
And if you were to recruit me, like this is our first time meeting, this is you want to recruit me or think that I'm a good fit for your company, how would you go about doing
it? Because if you're asking for my resume, that means you want to see something in there. I'm going to let you find it.
Okay.
But if I'm applying to it, I need to make it foolproof that I'm clearly the best person for this position.
What does failure is knowledge mean to you?
If you just won at every turn, you know, I'm a winner here, I'm a winner here, I'm a winner here. Did you really ever learn anything throughout that process?
She followed me to the hospital, nursed me back to health, and we've been together ever since.
And this was when?
9 years ago. 2016. Yeah, 2016.
9 years ago.
Hey, man.
Okay.
Got the thing on the same way?
Yes, sir. So this the magnet, and then you just put it this way?
Got it. Right about here?
Yep, that's cool. You may show this leaning just a little bit.
And then, do you care if I look directly at the camera at all or no?
No, that's what I'm saying in front of you.
Okay, got it.
So that way, I know it's awkward to talk to a camera.
Do you want me to talk directly to the camera or directly to you more often than not?
Directly to me.
Got it.
Do you mind telling me if this is crooked or not, the camera? You see how the difference now?
So slow down.
Okay.
There.
Is it still crooked?
Yeah, it's still crooked. You got to bring it up.
Just a little bit
right
more.
There. When you tighten it down, it brings it down.
It brings it down? I just felt it.
No. Yeah, so start tightening there.
Right there. Maybe I'll tighten it too tight.
No, tighten it a little bit more and bring it level.
To this
right
way?
There. There you go. I think that's good.
There
and then
go.
You've got the reverse facing camera, so you can.
Yes. So I'm a. Okay, yeah, it's good.
All right.
So in 25 minutes, give or take, I'm going to pause and then stop it and then start it again. So that way it can continue to go with the flow because it's going to stop recording at 30 minutes.
Gotcha.
So, you got any questions?
No, sir. I think I'm ready to go.
You got your water?
Yeah, man.
Okay. Are they cold enough?
We got our branding. That's perfect.
Yes, sir.
Come on, man. We're from Florida.
You see what I mean?
It's cold enough.
So, Bill, man, again, I appreciate you for taking the time to communicate with me, you know, share more about your story and
pleasure.
How we can actually, you know, partner together in the future. You shared a lot of your story with me today, which is so important because when I did some research on you, you said that you go to USF, you're going back to get your MBA. Mm-hmm. But before all the success, before all the family, before you're who you are today, why recruiting?
Oh, that's a hard question for most people. And for most people, it usually boils down to the same answer, right? I got into recruiting by accident, actually. And to understand how I got into recruiting in the first place, I got to tell you another story that specifically involves failure. So when I was 17, I had hair much longer, still just as curly, so I just had a little bit more of it back then. I was captain of the football team. I thought I was hot stuff, man. I was 17 years old. I played Ace Combat 4 on the original PlayStation. Wanted to be a fighter pilot. I thought that's what I was going to do with my life. I was convinced of it. So when I was 17, during the summer, I went to go see an Air Force recruiter over in Pinellas County. I walked in and, you know, my chest was probably puffed out a little bit too much. And I said, "Hey, Mr. Air Force recruiter, man, I'm going to fly." And he didn't even look up from his paper. He was like, "Son, you're never going to fly." And I was like, "Hey, no, for real. This is kind of what I want to do this." And he said, "You're never going to fly. Get out of my office." I didn't realize that was a test at the time, and I failed that test. And so I walked out of there thinking that whole career was done. I was never going to be able to do this. And so I go on, I go to college, I graduate from college. I failed my engineering degree. I was actually kicked out of the School of Engineering. There's a class called statics, and that's the engineering or the physics of things that don't move. So say there's a sign on the wall, how much torque does that affect on the wall? And with fluid dynamics, hydrodynamics, no problem, because I could picture in my head the way that things moved. When I got to statics, nothing is moving. And so I had a hard time with it. I took the class 3 times, I failed it 3 times. And so the School of Engineering at USF very kindly said, "Hey, thanks, but no thanks, Bill." So I had to get a degree in something, and so I got a degree in philosophy. Always enjoyed it. I had a really good high school teacher in philosophy, so I had enough credits to rush through a degree in philosophy. I graduated. I had no idea what I wanted to do at that point. So I moved out to Indian Rocks Beach, and I had a roommate, and we lived on the beach for a couple years. I found a job at a gym, and I was working at the gym from like 11 o'clock in the morning to like 8 o'clock in the afternoon. And eventually you get to know people, and I built up some good relationships there. I was responsible for membership sales. So I was kind of like recruiting people into the gym. In the fraternity, I had to recruit, and I've always been trying to get people to join my team, right? So as I was there was a gentleman by the name of Bo Moore. And Bo, if you ever watch this, I love you. Thank you for everything. Bo Moore, if you Google him, he is a world record holder for powerlifting. This is a big man. When I tell you he's got mitts for hands, oh my God, he's got the biggest hands I've ever seen in my life. And he would be lifting 450 pounds on bench and ask me to spot him. And I mean, listen, man, I know I look strong, right? But I would tell Bo, "Hey, listen, man, I'll stand behind you, but I can't really help you." And he's like, "No, listen, man, I just want somebody there." And he would ask me to spot him doing deadlifts. Am I supposed to spot a big barrel-chested man lifting 700 pounds, right? But I would stand there with him, and I built up a relationship with him over time. Eventually, I told him my story about the Air Force recruiter, and he was like, "Well, okay, come talk to me outside, Bill." "All right, Bo, what's up?" He's like, "Bill, I want you to come work for me." And I'd never been in that particular scenario before, so I was kind of, I had my guard up. I was like, "Why? What's up?" He goes, "Well, we're starting up a pilot program. And I figure if you have a desire for this, and obviously you're good at building relationships, I've been recruiting you for the past 8 months or so. And I finally have a spot open up on my team, and I think somebody like you would be good for it." I said, "Oh, wow. Okay, Bo. Thank you for the opportunity. So what exactly am I going to be doing?" He goes, "Well, you're going to be calling pilots and aircraft mechanics out of the military to come get their civilian certifications." I was like, "Okay. So not only do I get a job out of this, I get to satisfy that chip on my shoulder that I never actually got to get into the Air Force to fly." Turns out people in the Navy fly more than people in the Air Force actually do. I didn't know that at the time. But that's how I got to start my career in recruiting, and my career in the DoD was through a poorly failed attempt in the very beginning, which eventually led me down that path, and that's how I started recruiting. And so I was recruiting pilots and aircraft mechanics out of the military to get their civilian certification so they could fly commercially or work on aircraft using their GI Bill to get their certifications.
I didn't know that. Well, before we even had start recording and doing the conversation, doing the podcast, you shared with me that you broke your leg. Yeah. And then you shared with me that you just played football. And you also shared with me that you was a captain of the football team in high school.
Hillsborough?
Hillsborough. That is interesting. When I was in high school, so my hometown is Little Rock, Arkansas. But I went to a school called Little Rock Central High School. Mm-hmm. And my 9th to 10th grade, I wasn't that great. I'm not going to lie. It was horrible. My
football coach.
Y'all got to start at the bottom. Mm-hmm. You're talking about failure. Man, I couldn't get a break. My coach was on me every single day. Like, Humphrey, why are you doing this wrong? Humphrey, you got to do better. Humphrey, what is wrong with you? And then one day he was like, Humphrey, you are a high rep guy. I said, no, I ain't. I said, no, I think I'm a pretty good player. He said, yes, you are, because you don't understand nothing. I said, that's okay. It's
okay. But I'm here, right?
And so my 11th and 12th grade year, I was able to have a starting position. And I played defense. What position did you play?
Quarterback and receiver.
I played linebacker. My 11th grade year, I had... I can't see the stats from 11th grade year. I try to find them so often. But every week, every game, every quarter, my name is being called every single time. There was a play being ran, and there was a stop that needed to be stopped. Mm-hmm. That was like Terrell Humphrey with the tackle. Terrell Humphrey with the tackle. I got so used to that. I was like, ooh, that's different.
Feels good.
It feels amazing to be that star, but to put all that work in. And so my 12th grade year, okay, now I have to prove myself. Because 11th grade year is already out. Now I have to figure out what I'm good at. I'm good at the position. But now my teammates recommended me to be a captain. So then when I get opportunity to be a captain, I'm like, what's the difference? Thank y'all. I appreciate y'all. But at the same time, we still got to work. We still have something that we're working towards. And so my 12th grade year, we played four games. In the fourth game, I tore my ACL. Prior to me tearing my ACL, I had 36 tackles within the first four games.
That's a big deal.
That is a huge deal.
Were you Mike linebacker? Were you outside linebacker?
We ran a 5-2. So there was five linemen and two linebackers.
Wow, okay.
Yes, 36 tackles. And I was at the top for 2 to 3 weeks within that time after I tore my ACL.
Yeah, you're averaging 9 tackles a game.
That's unbelievable.
That's all state, man. Yeah.
Unbelievable. And you shared with me that you knew that you wasn't going to play football at USF and you had to come to terms with that. Mm-hmm. I knew I wasn't going to play college football because of my size.
Yep.
Like them boys in college are huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
It's
man.
The best of the best out of the high school group, right? And so I had dreams when I knew that the Air Force wasn't going to work out. I thought, hey, you know what? I'm going to pour everything into football. And so I thought, all right. How do I play at college? So I figured out what I had to do. And I realized I was never going to play quarterback in college, right? I was too small to be a receiver, but I had good hips and I was smart. So I was going to turn around and play DB. Mm-hmm. And I had a partial scholarship to play at FSU. And I think, okay, great. This is it. This is the start. I'm going to get there. I break my leg senior year after the football season. But I broke my leg doing gymnastics. I was trying to stay limber because I saw Michael Jordan would do ballet.
Yep.
Ballet wasn't necessarily for me, so I tried to do gymnastics instead. And so I broke my leg I've broken my leg 3 times. That's just this leg. I'm a rough and tumble kid, man.
That's 3 times? You didn't know your lesson the first time?
Well, no.
The second?
It didn't do it enough. And so the third time I made sure to do it right. And that's when I met my wife. She said if I ever broke it again, that's grounds for divorce.
Okay.
But that's not going to be a failure that I've recorded on my books.
Yeah. It's interesting. The lessons that we go through is always preparing us for the next step. It's always preparing us for the next lesson. It's always preparing us, and we don't understand how it's preparing us. Mm-hmm. And for you to meet your wife and for your wife to support you in a way that you needed the support, but you didn't recognize the support that you needed, what did that mean to you?
Oh my goodness. So this is going to come, I hear my father's words bubbling up inside of me, right? My dad always said that my mom was an angel, right? Mm-hmm. That I should treat her like an angel, and so that's how I grew up, right? And the way that my wife came into my life, when we first started dating, she kind of kept me at arm's length naturally, right? As everybody does when they're first meeting somebody. But it was really our first real date was going to that particular flag football game and then having her, and I'll send you a picture afterwards so you can put it up. So it's me and my whole team. I'm laying down on the ground and my toes are facing the other way. Mm. And she's off holding my hand, my right hand, and I look at her real quick. I'm like, hey, this is the first time we've ever held hands. So my leg is broken, my whole team's around me, but I had to take that second to do that. And I told you all that to tell you this, when she nursed me back to health and was there for me the whole time, it really was like an angel came down and was guiding me and helping me through all of that. And, you know, that was it. At the time, it was horrible, right? I didn't know how I was going to continue working because I had to have surgery on my leg. I had a plate and 18 screws in there, so I did it right the third time.
Yeah, the third time.
But she was there, and she was there for me mentally. She was there for me. I mean, I barely knew her at the time. It was our first date, was to that football game, and she started cooking for me, and I don't know about you, but any way to a man's heart, especially from the South, is through his stomach, and we've just been together ever since, and it really was, it was a blessing. So that failure, while at the time, felt, you know, it was world-ending, right? My leg is broken, I can't walk anymore, and if I can't walk, I couldn't do my job at the time anymore. I was working at National Aviation Academy. Bo had left the company since then, and so part of my job description was to give tours of the aviation hangar. At the hangar, there's routinely oil on the ground, and so my job at the time said, hey, we can't have you work it right now. You have to take FMLA. Mm. And so now my leg is broken. I have no income. You know, what am I going to do? And then this angel named Sion Provenzano comes down and says, it's all right, Bill. We're going to get you through this. And we've been together ever since.
And that's what, 2016? 2016, yeah. And Bo showed you the way of recruiting.
Correct.
Of working with others and how to build relationships.
Yes.
One thing that I've learned while being on the journey is that you have to be in relationships in order for you to succeed, in order for you to get to the next level, in order for you to learn from experienced people. The biggest thing that Bo taught you was what?
Was, oh my God, I hear Bo's words right now, to deliver the message, right? And Bo, I'm telling you, he's a big old man. He put his hands down on the desk like this, and he said, you got to deliver the message. And the message was that we can make your life better by doing X, Y, and Z. But in order to make your life better, we need to understand what you actually want. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that Bo taught, that Bo taught me specifically, was he sat me down and says, Bill, what do you want? It's a hard question to answer. I mean, you say, yeah, I want $1 million. All right, man, what do you want to do with that? How do you want to get that? You know, there's always, you know, what do you want? I want to retire. Okay, well, how are you going to get there? And so he taught me to ask that question. And asking that question to everybody I talked to was often a hard question for them, too. And to see them kind of struggle with that helped me kind of figure out, okay, I got to ask that question millions and millions of times. Everybody who I ever recruited heard that question come out of my head, like, what do you want? And that was really the main message that he had us deliver, is what do you want? And if you want what I can deliver, here's how we can help you get to where you want.
Mm, so you're laying the foundation down first.
Correct.
Understanding what this person wants. And then if y'all can meet halfway, then this is how you show them, this is how we can help you accomplish what you want.
The message is how to get to where you want to go. But in order for there to be a good match, I have to know what you want, and I have to know that I can help you get there, because part of recruiting is knowing that you can't help everybody. And it's funny, when I recruit recruiters now, I ask them, what do you want? And whenever somebody says, hey, I want to help people, you're not going to be a very good recruiter.
Why?
Because helping people is a byproduct of recruiting. And that's what a lot of people don't understand about recruiting. Recruiters don't help people find jobs. Recruiters help fill positions at companies. And there's a very distinct difference there. And a good recruiter knows this is what it takes to fill this position. Now, you're going to help people along the way. Don't get me wrong. The recruiting is a very rewarding career if you can make that distinction. But if you cannot make that distinction, then you're not making very good matches. And then you're not helping people. You're building people's hopes and dreams up, and then you're not able to close the deal at the end of the day. You're not actually doing your job. So you're wasting time with the company, you're wasting time of the candidate, and that's how recruiters often get a bad name. And I say that a lot in the recruiting industry. It's called the lost dog syndrome or the good guy syndrome. Like, hey, we really need to help this guy. He's a great guy. He can do it.
Okay.
Yeah, he might be a great guy, but he doesn't fulfill the requirements of the position that we're required to fill. Right? That's actually why I really enjoy recruiting inside the DoD. After I left NAA, I spent 18 months outside of the DoD, and I worked for an agency. And I got to really cut my teeth on hardcore recruiting, right? I had to talk to 10 people a day. If I didn't talk to 10 people that day, I wasn't doing my job, right? I had to interview 8 people a day. If I didn't interview 8 people a day face-to-face, I wasn't doing my job. I had to make at least one placement a week if I would, and so I had to do all of these things. And that's where I learned the business side of recruiting. But because I was outside of the DoD, I realized I didn't really enjoy the people. And I have to like the people who I have to recruit, right? And so I spent 18 months outside of the DoD, realized, okay, this isn't for me. I found a way to get myself back into the DoD. Another failure story. So I had great guy syndrome. And I was required to fill recs. I had this whole planned thing out. I was eventually let go from my recruiting job. And my boss at the time, he sat me down. I loved the way that he let me go, and I learned a lot from him. He said, listen, Bill, we love you as a person, but right now we're paying you more than you're making for the company. It's a numbers game. I gotta let you go. And he did it with class. I mean, he shook my hand at the end, no harm, no foul. We'll help you find another job somewhere else, but this isn't the best fit for you. And so I failed again. And at the time, I was thinking, well, listen, I just spent 18 months in agency recruiting. I know how to play this game, right? I should be really good at this by now. So I did everything that I learned how to do. I tailored my resume. I was going to networking events. I was volunteering to get my face out there. I was doing everything that I was taking my medicine, right? And at the time, I drove a 2-door F-150 with roll down windows and no power locks, no power windows. The power steering had gone out on it. I mean, I love that truck, but it was old. And I'm in a 3-piece suit, and I was living in Tampa at the time, and I drove across a bridge to Career Source Pinellas to go to a networking event. And so I was across the bridge, and it was a really dry networking event. My hopes were down, and I was really getting down on myself. And I was thinking, man, Bill, it's been 3 weeks. You're supposed to be a recruiter. You can play this game. I thought you were great at this. This is the inner monologue with myself. And so the recruiting or the networking event was super dry. I didn't get anything out of it. I'm sweating my tail off. It's the middle of June. Coming back over across the bridge, and this is right when the World of Beer opened up just south of the airport. It was brand new. And so I'm driving past it, and I'm like, you know what? It's 3:00 on a Tuesday. All right, I'm going to pull over, and I'm going to get a beer, and I'm going to reassess my life right now. So I pull up, I order my beer, and I belly up to the bar. And I, my jacket's in the truck because I'm sweating. And so I'm sitting there, and all I'm doing is I'm just listening to people all around me, and I'm deep in my own thoughts, and I hear some folks talking behind me, and they're talking about the full motion video analysts up at Fort Bragg. And I was like, I know some of those words. So I turn around, and I'm like, hey, are you guys talking about the J-Gas contract? And they look at me like, oh my God, you can hear us? And I was like, well, yeah, I think I'm familiar with that contract. And so we get to talking a little bit, and I eventually asked them, I was like, hey, what are you guys here, 3:30 on a Tuesday? What are you doing? And they're like, well, we're out here brainstorming how we're going to find our next defense recruiter. And I was like, oh, well, I've got a copy of my resume in the truck right now. And so I ran out there, I grabbed it, I brought it back to him, and it turned into an interview. And in true military fashion, they got me hammered. Mm-hmm. And scheduled me for a 7 a.m. interview the next morning. So I was real drunk. I had to call my girlfriend at the time, who became my wife.
Yep, yep.
And she had to come pick me up from the World of Beer and take me to the interview the next morning. And because I had to leave my truck there, right? And the interview was at 7 a.m. Mm. So she picked me up. I told you, angel. And took me to the interview. And 2 weeks later, I had my job. And that just went to show me, you know, you could be doing everything right. You can be doing the whole recruiting thing right. You can be tailoring your resume. You can be going to the networking events. You can be getting your face out there. But you should always take a little bit of time for yourself and always make time for a beer. Right? But it's the power of networking and the power of opportunity, just being there in the moment. And if I would have never pulled over, I would have never had that opportunity at SRG Government Services with Jimmy Bezier, Caitlin, who else was there, I think, and Travis Heyer at the time. And it was a great opportunity.
You just shared an amazing story with me on how you failed so many times. Mm-hmm. And your failure led you to be more prepared because you held your resume in the car.
Well, yeah, I was coming back from a networking event. So one event failed.
Yep.
And it was just on my way home that another one, you know, became available to me.
Yes. That's one thing about failure, that you never know where the next opportunity is going to come from. But the faster you fail, the faster you grow. The faster you fail, the faster you learn. The faster you fail, the faster you improve. So I want to go off script for a second. So okay. Since you are a recruiter, and if you were to recruit me, mm-hmm. like this is our first time meeting, you want to recruit me or think that I'm a good fit for your company, how would you go about doing that?
Oh, it's sales 101.
Let's role play.
Okay,
let's
hold on. Let's do it. Before I do that,
okay. Let's do it.
I need to set a stage for you, right?
Set the stage.
Recruiting is the hardest sales job in the world.
Okay.
Because recruiting involves sales both ways. Any salesman can sell a Cadillac. You can look at the paint, you can look at the tires, you can look at the emblem. You don't have to sell the Cadillac to the person. Recruiting, I can't point at anything, right? I sell dreams, intangibles, promises, right? Your life is gonna be better working for him, and then pause. Now I gotta go to him. Hey, your life is gonna be better having this individual work for you. Mm. So I've gotta sell it both ways.
Okay.
And so recruiting is hard. There's gotta be an opportunity to recruit you for it. But for the sake of argument, let's say that there's a great opportunity. When I recruit everybody, I ask one question. So there's different types of interviews, right? There's the question, answer, very dry, mm-hmm. transactional type of interview. And then there's the conversational interview. I prefer the conversational interview, right? So if I sit down, obviously I've already read your resume. There's a reason I'm sitting down in front of you. I say, Terrell, what do you want to do?
So I want to help others not only become the best version of themselves, but find a great opportunity that will help them find their somebody-ness.
Okay. And how do you plan to monetize that?
And I plan to monetize that by doing podcasts and by hosting different events, by going to different networking events and showing and building community around not only just the podcasting community, but for the creator, for entrepreneurs, to let them know that you're not alone. So that way our community is growing, people's lives are changing, and we're making an impact at the same time.
Okay, and why did you choose podcasting as your medium of choice?
Because it's a great way to reach a lot of people in a short span of time. So not only 101 is great, What about 1 to 10, 1 to 20, 1 to 50? Yes, you can do that in person, but the podcasting space is so special because I'm able to reach so many different people that I've never met before. And the people that I've never met before, they can start learning more about who I am, what we have to offer, and how we can help them. So it helps me connect with so many different people at a short span of time to not only help them, but to show them that there's a different way that you can pursue.
Okay. Now take me back a little bit. Where does that passion come from to try and help those people?
Excellent question. It came from when I went through a heartbreak. I went through a divorce, and during that time, I felt alone. I felt isolated. I felt by myself, not knowing that I was by myself and alone because I wasn't around the right people. One day, I was in California, and in California, they have like different mountains, different trails that you can go down to, and we ended up working out. I ended up working out with my buddy, and it was a hill that you have to go down. Then you have to walk down the hill. Then you have to start at the bottom. And once you get to the bottom, you have to run it up. You have to run up the hill, down the hill, and then you have to train your body. As we was walking, I was speaking to a gentleman, and he shared with me that he was going through a breakup. During this time, I'm going through a breakup. And he's using the same language. He's using the same expressions. He's using the same emotions that I was using. So at the time, I'm thinking there's no way this gentleman, this man, that I just talked to, that I just met, is going through the same thing that I'm experiencing. And it taught me there was something here. It taught me that I'm not alone. I'm just not around the right people. I just don't have the right community. I just don't have the right influencers to help me to not necessarily influencers, but experience to help me go through the pain. And so what pushed me to is to know that I'm not alone. I just have to get around people that will understand how to help me, how to get to the next step.
Okay. And so if I had an opportunity that allowed you to help people the way that you want to. Clearly you have the passion for it, to help the people, and do that through a podcasting medium or a forum. It sounds like you would be open to that opportunity, and it seems like it would be something that you would be looking for. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, you do. Yes.
Okay. Well, let's talk about salary.
Okay. Okay. Let's talk about salary.
I've already got you at this point.
Why is it? Because I start smiling?
No.
Because you heard me.
Because I'm asking questions.
Okay.
Right? Uh-huh. I find out what you want to do. Uh-huh. And if I can satisfy what you want to do, now you, if the salary and everything else makes sense, I've already got what you want.
Mm.
Now it's just how to get there. And I'll tell you, I mean, that's that goes back to the sell me this pen thing, right?
Right.
From Wall Street.
Yeah.
Because it's not about selling the pen. It's asking the right questions, right? And if I have something that you want, and if I'm just sitting here telling you all the reasons why you would want it, it's not the reasons why you want it. You just told me all the reasons why you would want a podcasting job to help people. And so recruiting is sales. But it sails both ways. So now I got to take all those demographic information from you, your salary, your availability, your willingness to travel, a little bit about your history, certifications, background, degrees, years of experience. Once I get all that, then I have to take that information and go to Mr. Hiring Manager. Hey, Mr. Hiring Manager, I've got this candidate for your podcasting job, right? Now, previously you told me that you wanted someone who was driven, someone who wouldn't just be a 9-to-5 type of person, someone who had the right type of passion. And when I tell you I think I've found that person, here's Mr. Terrell Humphrey. Now, he has a passion for this, that he's been doing it for a while, and the passion comes from a unique opportunity way back when he was much younger. And he had to go through some heartbreak, and he found someone that he could kind of side with. Once he realized that he wasn't alone, that's when this career of his began to blossom. Now he's got X amount of years of experience, and when I tell you he's got the passion, I need you to sit down with this man and hear his passion. I'm never gonna be able to do it justice, but I think it's worth an interview of your time. Based off of what you told me you want, this man satisfies all of your requirements. And then obviously I talk about salary and availability and X, Y, and Z, right?
That was good. Let me tell you why. Because I wrote down the question.
Yep.
I wrote down the question. How you explained it, I think it's right here. Yep. how do you become a strategic and visionary chief people officer? And he just explained it about understanding what the other person want. Mm-hmm. And giving them what they want, if it matches up to both, not only to the recruiter, but to the hiring manager as well. Did you learn that in the first year when Bo was teaching you, or when Bo, is he still in your life?
Actually, yes.
Okay. When you start doing the recruiting for yourself, mm-hmm. When did it all start making sense of what Bo was teaching you when he was asking, he told you to ask that one question?
When I learned that asking that one question was just the first step. Mm. Once you start asking the right question to the right people, you move away from a transactional occupation more into a relation-based occupation. And so I got to hone this through volunteering, through Project Transition USA and Hiring Our Heroes, and Onward to Opportunities. I do a lot of work for the veteran community as they transition out, because that's the community that I like to work with. And I got to do that a lot. Where it all made sense to me, there were two very pivotal points. One was with Dr. Danny Sava, who's been a mentor of mine. I love you, Danny. Go Lions. And he's a big Detroit fan. So I worked with him, and he was my customer at the time. He was my hiring manager. I was his recruiter. And I asked him, what do you want in a team? And he was like, oh, Bill, no one's ever asked me that before. Like, I need you to fill my recs. And I was like, yeah, anybody can fill your recs. What do you want to build your team? And his eyes kind of got big, and I was like, okay, that's a little weird. Nobody's ever asked you that question before, because it was commonplace for me. And he was like, well, Bill, I really want to build my team with people like this. And I was like, all right, yeah, sure, no problem. So I went and I did it. And so I built up a very good relationship with him. He event and another failed opportunity, right? I had, was working on the Special Operations IT Enterprise contract at Jacobs.
That is a name.
SciTech 2, yeah. Well, once you get in the DoD community, you get the
acronyms.
Yep. So I was working on that particular contract, and I was passed up for a promotion. And whether or not I was rightly passed up or not is neither here nor there. However, the fact of the matter is, someone who I hired to my team got promoted before me, and I was going to have to report to them, someone who I hired. And don't get me wrong, that person deserved it. They're wonderful. But at the time, it kind of hurt my machado, right? It kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. And but I didn't let it show, and I kept on going. I was doing my thing. And shortly thereafter, Dr. Danny Sava, I was talking with him about it, and he goes, well, you know, Bill, I'm going to need a new recruiter for the NISC 2 contract, the NORAD Integrated Space Support contract up in Colorado Springs. And he gave me that opportunity and said, Bill, I want you to come recruit. I want you to be my main recruiter up here. And so that's when I learned that it's not transactional. It's all about relationships. I told you that story to tell you this one. I worked for Dr. Danny for a little while. I loved working for Dr. Danny. And there was someone who I helped transition out of the military through one of the networking events. And he gives me a call out of the blue, like 6:30 on a Thursday, right? I don't remember exactly what day it was. He's like, hey, Bill, send me a copy of your resume. Okay, so I sent it to him. And I'll do that for anybody, right? Because I look at resumes all day. I happen to think mine is pretty decent. But if you ever want to copy format or content from my resume, yeah, that's what it's there for. So I just figured he needed it for some reason. About 30 minutes later, I get a phone call from the CEO of some company. And he introduces himself, but I wasn't paying attention. And it's a random phone call, right? Says, hey, Bill, I hear you're good at recruiting. I was like, yeah, maybe. What's it to you? You got to give me more than this, man. And he goes, well, let me ask you some questions. What would you do in this scenario? So I think about it for a second. And, okay, I'd probably do this. So, okay, well, what would you do in this scenario? Okay, I'd probably do this. All right, Bill, let me ask you another question. What would you do in this scenario? So hold on now, man. If I'm going to be doing all this work for you, I need to charge you a consulting fee. I'm not going to do this work for you for free. And he goes, good answer. I don't want to hire you as a consultant. I'd rather just hire you. And I was like, hey, thanks, but no thanks, man. I work for Dr. Danny right now. I got a great thing going. I work for Space Force. It sounds cool. You know, I'm flattered, but no, thank you. He goes, okay, well, what's it going to take? All right, man, I need this number and this. And he goes, okay, what else? What else? Okay, I want quarterly bonuses. I want an office with a window, and I want a good title. He goes, okay, is that it? I'm like, okay, pause. I think I see what's happening here. I'm in a negotiation. I negotiate for a living. I didn't realize I was in one at the time, so I had to do a tactical pause and be like, hey, you know what, listen, I need to do some more research on you, make sure I've got all 6 shots of my 6-shooter before I continue this conversation. And so we agreed to meet. The negotiation process lasts almost 4 months, right? And at the end of it, I shake his hand and I say, all right, you know what, thank you very much. I'm gonna accept this offer. And so it was because of that failed promotion that I got to have a couple of those hard lessons learned that it's really all about relationships. And so you asked me, how did I get to a point of a CPO? It was because I was able to build on those relationships. And through the negotiation process, I built a relationship with who was going to be my future boss. And I asked him those same questions. Hey, what do you want out of this position? I know you have an idea of it, but I need you to verbalize it so I can tell you whether or not I can do these things. And throughout that time, I figured out what he wanted, and I built that relationship with him over time. And now, you know, almost 4 years later, here I am.
4 months. Oh, 4 years and then 4 months.
4 months of negotiation. Yeah.
Right. Is it negotiating, or is it really building a relationship with one another to understand what each other needs and what they want?
Yes.
So what you got taught, how Bo taught you, it got... What is called? You ever play Uno?
It was repackaged. Yeah, absolutely. And then reverse again, absolutely. And I would just keep playing that same card over again, right?
And so when he cared about you, sorry to interrupt. When he cared about you, you felt appreciated.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just like you do for everybody else, he did that for you. He made you actually think about what do you want.
Mm-hmm. And it's that same question that always keeps popping up in my life. And it's funny how the answer will change from time to time. What do you want to do? That's a hard question to answer, right? I mean, yeah, I want to do this, that, and that, the other, but what do you want to do for your career? What do you want to do for yourself? What do you want to do for this? And I specifically leave it as an open-ended question. Because if I ask too pointed of a question, I'm going to get too pointed of an answer. Mm. And you don't really get to know somebody unless you ask those broad questions and allow them to choose their own path on how to eventually get to that end point. And if that end point matches up with the job that I'm trying to fill, then great. We've got a good relationship and we can move forward. But if the answer to what do you want to do isn't the opportunity that I have, it's my responsibility to tell that person, hey, I'm going to build a relationship with you, but I can't hire you. Mm. Let's see if I know somebody in the industry who can hire you. And you'd be surprised about how many people I may meet now and may never actually get a chance to work with them until 4, 5, 6 years later. And that happens all once you're in recruiting for a long time, you realize that the people you make relationships in the very beginning end up helping you along the way in the very end, if you're able to do relationship-based recruiting. Recruiters get a bad name when it's all transactional. You ever hear about people being ghosted by a recruiter? I hate that. It gives recruiters a bad name, right? And so me and my team, we make a practice to never ghost. So we always let somebody go. We tell them exactly why. And then if we can help them by pointing them in another direction or contacting some of our other recruiting buddies, we're going to do that. Because we never know when that relationship needs to be called on again. So it's a ton of very small micro relationships.
Okay, hello.
Yeah.
Hold on. Last thing you said, what was the last thing you said?
It's a lot of micro relationships.
Micro relationships. You just made me think about, so you know that saying, once you get in business,
mm-hmm.
stay in business.
Absolutely.
You just made me understand that quote. Now, when you get in recruiting, stay in recruiting, because you never know when, where, how is going to make sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
You literally just made that make sense now.
I'm glad I can help you make that connection. And honestly, I didn't do it. That was all you, my friend, is being in the right place at the right time.
And you learned that. You shared the story on how you learned that when you was at the club? I don't know. It was a club when you went to drink a beer.
Oh yeah, the World of Beer.
Yeah. It wasn't even expected for you to meet someone that would give you the opportunity.
No.
But you was prepared, and you're always. I'm having an epiphany moment right now. If you can't tell.
Yeah.
But you're always prepared, even when you're unprepared, based off your failures.
Correct. Yep, and you never have to get prepared if you stay prepared, right?
Okay.
So, just as a word of the wise for everybody, you always keep your resume up and handy. You never want an opportunity to pass up for somebody to say, hey, do you have a copy of your resume handy? I'd really like to look at it. Say, oh, you know, I need to go and update it. Oh, no.
Oh, right? You just missed the opportunity because you wasn't ready.
So yeah. even myself right now, I always have my resume up on my laptop. And anytime I do something new, for instance, I'm going on the Failure is Knowledge podcast, right? And so when I get back, I'm going to go open up my resume. I'm going to go, yeah, I was on a podcast. And then I go and shut it down, right? And so now if anybody ever asks for my resume, I've got a master version of my resume that's got everything that I've ever done from the beginning of time. Now, if I'm ever going to apply to a position, then yeah, I'm going to tailor it to the position that I'm going to apply to. But if you're just asking for a generic copy of my resume, I'm going to give you everything I've ever done. I'm going to let you pull out of there from what you want to see. Because if you're asking for my resume, that means you want to see something in there. I'm going to let you find it.
Okay.
But if I'm applying to it, I need to make it foolproof.
Right.
That I'm clearly the best person for this position. That's two different resumes.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about MCS.
Perfect.
Let's talk about it and how you are not only the CPO or Chief People Officer.
Correct.
All these acronyms.
Uh-huh.
What does it mean to be in a company that values you and the people that work for them?
So MCS is family owned and operated. And it has been for 34 years now. And that was something that I gravitated towards, because I used to work at a very large company, and there's a lot of red tape. Sometimes you are literally just a number at a very large company with 55,000 employees worldwide, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunity to do work a little bit more local and be part of a family-owned and operated company, that meant that I get to build on those relationships intentionally. And I get to have those relationships here. Previously, my relationships were all across the world. They were geographically dispersed throughout the nation, right? And down here at MCS, all of those relationships are more in-house. And I get to foster those relationships with a little bit more intent. And honestly, it's a lot easier to foster a relationship when they're just down the hall from you, right? And MCS really does allow me to build those relationships. And that's really something that I've done for a long time. It's something that Dr. Gil Gonzalez recognized that I was good at from the very beginning. And I'm very thankful to him to give me the opportunity to continue to hone that craft within the confines of MCS.
One thing that earlier we spoke about how you are going back to USF to get your MBA,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, I attend Kaiser University getting my business management degree, and they literally explain when you work for an organization and the organization care for the people will excel, will grow, and the company will just naturally evolve over time. And when I heard that, at first it didn't make sense. I'm like, why does a company have to care for people? It's a company. I don't understand that. And then as I continue to learn, as different questions, as different professors or whatnot, they explain, in order for the company to grow, the people have to be cared for.
Mm-hmm.
We did a scenario yesterday. It was like six of us around a table, and it was like different emotions that we had to share. One, I was IT. And they said that I'm never a part of the conversation, and I always feel alone.
Hmm.
And the project manager had to hear everyone's emotion and give us like, hey, I hear you. Hey, it's okay. Hey, we can work as a team. What? Here's the kicker. The biggest takeaway from it was when every one of us gave our own input on how to make the team better. It was the team aspect that brought to my eyes, that really opened my eyes. And when you explained that, it's the team aspect that makes you more successful.
And that requires having a good team where you feel comfortable and confident enough to be able to share those differing points of views. You may have one opinion on how to make the team better. Somebody else may have a completely different idea on how to make the team better. But that's the idea, that you trust each other to be able to share those differing ideas, and then you have the ability to have that good conflict. Right? There's a difference between good conflict and bad conflict. Good conflict is, hey, how do we get to this end point? And if somebody shares a different opinion than you, you're not attacking the person. You say, okay, I see that you have a different way to get there. How do we get there together? And then you hold yourselves accountable, and then you always have to have that focus on results at the very end. And as long as you've got that focus on the results and you've got the trust of that team's going to do wonders, right? And that team can be just the five of you and the project manager, or it can be a 400-person company like MCS. But if you have that foundation of trust that says, hey, listen, I trust you to be completely honest and transparent with me, and we all have the same goal at the very end. We all agree on this, yes? Then we will eventually get to that goal.
Yeah, that's exactly how that went. For MCS, what does MCS stand for? If anyone wanted to be a part of you all company, talk to you as the recruiter and see what opportunities can they get. Where can a veteran learn more about your company at?
So MCS stands for Mission Critical Solutions, and if you look us up, it's missioncriticalsolutions.net, not .com. But you go to missioncriticalsolutions.net. The best way to find me is always on LinkedIn. If you reach out to me on LinkedIn and I don't answer you back immediately, it's okay. Have patience. I promise I will get there eventually. But that's really the best way to go about doing it. And then the best way for a veteran to learn about MCS is to do what's called an informational interview. You look at MCS, and if you go on LinkedIn, you can search all the people who work for MCS, and then you can do a sub-filter to see what their past companies are. On that past companies filter, you look for people who came out of the military, whatever particular branch you're coming from. And then you reach out to that person and say, hey, I see that you came out of the Air Force, now you work for MCS. I'm about to get out of the Air Force. I'm interested in MCS. Can you tell me about your experience with MCS? You get somebody talking about themselves first, right? You do it. I'm telling you, it's the best way to do
it. It works.
People love talking about themselves. Like, you're doing it to me, right? And and so you ask them how their transition was. And more often than not, they'll be very, very transparent with you, because you already have that warm connection that, hey, we're both coming out of the same branch. And typically, you know, try and make sure that you've got something else in common to be able to start that conversation off with. If you get them talking about their transition, eventually the conversation will turn to, hey, how can I help you? Now you got them.
Right? Now you got them.
Say, hey, listen, and you never ask for the job. Right? You don't come to dinner empty-handed, right? You always come with something. Your mother taught you better than that. You bring a bottle of wine, you bring flowers, you bring something. And so that's asking them about their careers. And then you don't ask for the job. You ask, hey, who should I talk to? Unless they offer you, hey, can I get a copy of your resume? Can I go hand this to somebody for you? And that happens a lot of times as well. It's all about being able to build that relationship with that person in a very short amount of time, effectively and with purpose.
Okay, so before we end, I got two more questions, okay?
Absolutely.
But I want to read something. I want to see if you remember this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to ask the last question. Oh, the last segment is going to be best for last. So before the best for last, let me I'm going to read it.
Mm-hmm.
I met Bill on May 31st, 2024 at the LinkedIn workshop. He was incredibly knowledgeable when it comes to recruiting and hiring on LinkedIn. It's not about who you know, but who knows, like, and trusts you. What does that comment mean?
Well, hold on, Terrell. Who wrote that?
I think I wrote this.
Yeah, that was, I know. So the question was, what does that mean to me?
Yes.
Okay. So, first of all, great question. Tell you exactly what that means to me. I had a hiring manager. It was a gentleman by the name of Clinton Austin, or CA. Hey, CA. Love you, bud. CA, he was one of my hiring managers. And he had me go on a wild goose chase for a candidate that I thought didn't exist. Someone with a TSSCI clearance, with a CISSP certification, with 15 years of experience, with software that's only been out for 5 years. They need to be able to do backflips and flip flapjacks on Sunday mornings and work night shift, right? I had a laundry list of this position I had to fill. I work on it for 2 or 3 weeks. I have to come back and give a report to the government as to why I cannot fill this position. Why I can't fill this position? Because there's only 4 people in the world who do this, and we already employ 3 of them. Like, this is a hard position. And this is what I need to do to eventually complete my job. And CA came back to me and said, okay, well, thanks for that. Don't worry about it. And he does that used car salesman thing where he kind of slides a piece of paper across the desk, and he says, this is who I want to hire. And I look at that resume, and I look at it, I'm like, this guy doesn't have anything with what you just told me to look for. This resume is horrible. What are you doing? Like, what do you mean you want to hire this person? He goes, well, I know him, and I trust him, and I want him on my team. And that was a huge moment for me where I was like, oh my God, the relationship thing is, it works. Because if you have someone who can refer you in, then the application process is just a formality. The resume is just a formality. The interview is just a formality at that point. If you know someone who has that kind of power within the company, they can get you into that position. And so it's not about who knows you. Sometimes it's not even about who likes you. It's about who trusts you. And if you can build that relationship with enough people who trust you, everything else will fall into place.
That's powerful. When you said sometimes you have to do things for other people first.
Absolutely.
And then they will do it for you. I already knew that because it was this book called The Go-Giver. And it explains how you have to be willing to be a go-giver, like go out your way to make a difference for someone else's life. Not looking for nothing in return or looking for nothing or expecting something. Just go out and be a good person. Mm-hmm. And when you explain that, I'm like, hold on, let me go ahead and practice what you're preaching. Mm-hmm. I literally did it right there during the LinkedIn workshop.
You did.
And it taught me more about building relationships for a long term. Mm-hmm. It's not just about today, or what was it, May 31st, 2024?
And I made you a promise that day.
What was the promise?
Bring me onto your podcast and I'll give you a referral back.
Oh!
So that's one of the, I got to tell you, everybody's got their own superpowers.
Right.
Right. And I believe that very firmly, that everybody has their own superpowers. They just need to tap into it and figure it out. One of mine is that I can recall conversations almost word for word, which makes me a great recruiter. It makes my wife very angry.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can recall conversations where I can put myself back into where I was when I heard that, and I know what happened. I can figure out what happened before and what happened afterwards. I can put myself right back in that same spot. So I made a promise to you. Yeah, if you give me that referral, bring me onto your podcast, and I will give you one back.
Dang. Yeah. Well, I do that often. But the way that you did, like, every detail, I remember some parts of the detail of every conversation, but all of them, I don't know about the whole entire conversation, but that's great, that's phenomenal. And so the best for last section is that you answer 4 questions with a quick explanation, and then we get a response like that.
Okay,
so first question, what are you grateful for?
My children.
Do you have any regrets?
Oh my goodness. This isn't the answer you want to hear, but yeah, I think everybody is filled with regrets. Everybody's got missed opportunities, and I'm plagued with the ability to notice those missed opportunities, and those sit on me for a long time. Like, man, I've really messed up that opportunity back there. I regret not being able to do that. But then again, I wouldn't be here if I didn't have those. So yes, I've got them, but I don't think that I regret them in the serious sense of the term.
Okay.
I think it's...
My apologies.
You're good. I think it's just the knowledge that I missed something, and I hold myself to a higher standard, and I try not to miss too many things.
Okay. So you got to keep regretting. You can learn on the journey.
Well, you have to get those regrets in order to catch the next one and make sure you don't make that same mistake over again.
That's true. Over your life, what's been the biggest thing that you've learned and that you kept with over the years?
Never give up, and even when you feel like giving up, you got to fall back on those relationships that got you to where you are. Even when you feel like you want to, those relationships will help bring you back up.
Everything's about relationships.
It really is.
And then last question, what does failure is knowledge mean to you?
You got to, it's really self-explanatory. If you just won at every turn, you know, I'm a winner here, I'm a winner here, I'm a winner here. Did you really ever learn anything throughout that process, right? No, you just learned that you were good at X, Y, and Z, and you know, you think you're going to win again the next time. That's just great confidence, but it's not built on anything. Knowledge is the ability to take certain facts and evidence and put that together. And then what you have to do is you have to take that knowledge and turn it into wisdom. Wisdom is the application of knowledge, right? And so if you never have the opportunity to build those facts, to create, to build that evidence, to create that knowledge, you're never going to be wise. And in order to eventually be wise, you have to fail enough times to build the knowledge to get there.
That's powerful. Random tidbit, you just remind me of something. So before I even discovered failure is knowledge, at first I was gonna go with BAM. By any means. And then my friend, she was like, did you look it up and see if it was taken? I said, why would I do that? This is a good idea. No, I did not. I'm telling everybody, bam, this is it. I go on Google, type in BAM, and I see so many different things pop up. And I'm like, man, that was a good one. I thought that was actually pretty good.
It was a good one. Everybody agreed with you.
Everybody. Oh, my goodness. So I'm like, okay. My feelings was hurt. I was confused. I'm like, I literally put time and effort to think about this one particular thing. Let me just go for a drive. So I'm in California. I ended up going on a drive from my house. Was like maybe 10 to 15 minutes from my house to Walmart. And I'm looking at the billboards. I'm trying to get like a hint of something gonna talk to me. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the military, when I was in the Marine Corps, there's a lot of acronyms. So I'm thinking, what if I just find some letters that represent what I'm looking for, or the words that'll make sense? Probably like by any means, but I'm looking for it. I end up going to Walmart, and I end up getting like some candy or something like that. And I'm thinking. And I asked the worker, I said, hey, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you. Do you mind if I just ask you a question on how this sounds? She was like, yeah, no problem. I was like, knowledge is wisdom. She was like, that's the same thing. Is it? She said, yeah. Scanned it, went back to the house. I'm like, knowledge is wisdom, knowledge is wisdom, knowledge is wisdom, knowledge is wisdom, knowledge is wisdom. Is failure, so I looked up failure, then I looked up knowledge. Oh, they got different meanings. Then I wrote on the board, we had like a little small little whiteboard. I wrote failure is knowledge, I'm looking at it. Does that make sense? At the time I was married, I was like, does that make sense? She was like, yeah. I'm like, hold on, okay. I ain't gonna do what I did the first time with BAM. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do with the failure is knowledge, I'm just gonna hold it for a little minute. And then, here's the kicker. When I start listening to different videos, different conversations, different interviews, they say failure is wisdom. Failure is success. Failure is a form of you learning. But nobody has ever said failure is knowledge. I said, I got it.
And it was born.
It was born.
And here we are.
Here we are. Bill, I appreciate it. How can people find you? How can they work with you? How can they connect with you? How can they learn more about MCS?
MCS online, missioncriticalsolutions.net. You can find me on LinkedIn, William with Bill in parentheses, Crowder. And I do that for a very specific reason. Recruiters have a horrible reputation for spamming out emails and spamming out contacts. And so if you reach out to me and call me William, I know that we've never spoken before in my life. I will always correct you to call me Bill.
That is true.
And
that is true.
If you send me out something and it says William and Bill in parentheses, I know that you're not actually reaching out to me. You just, you did that, it's called a token where you put the brackets around. And so it's bracket, first underscore name in bracket, and that will plug in the first name on LinkedIn for you. So I know if you do that, you're not actually trying to talk to me. But if you reach out to me on LinkedIn and say, hey, Bill, I saw this, this, and this. I know you're a real person, and I will respond that way.
That he would do that. He would definitely do that. He did that to me. I was like, what's going on, William? He was like, please call me Bill.
Yeah.
Say no more, Bill. Bill, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
And yeah, man. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be great.
I look forward to it.
How was being on Fair Years and Lives podcast?
It was great. I could tell you had done all of your homework, which I really respect. Real easy conversation. It felt very natural. It felt like I'm sitting back talking with a friend. And you know, a lot of what we talked about today was about relationships, and I'm happy that we were able to build on our relationship.
And what was your biggest takeaway from being on Fair Years and Lives podcast?
You know, it was really an opportunity to look analytically at my history. Everybody goes through their lives, and you know, you have to live in the moment, right? But it's a good opportunity to look past and to recognize all of the victories that you've had. I've been characterized before as moving too fast, and I had a mentor of mine tell me, "Hey, Bill, you need to stop and slow down and smell the roses. You're going too much." And at the time, I was like, "No, I got to keep going." And it's through opportunities like this where I get to sit back and talk about the things that I've done and the steps that it took to get me to where I am. It's a really good takeaway to have the opportunity to sit down and look at that and to share it with somebody who's genuinely interested in it.
If you was to recommend Failures Knowledge podcast to someone, why would you recommend the podcast to them?
Oh, it's an opportunity to build a relationship with another wonderful person, right? And you never know when those opportunities or relationships are going to come to fruition or to eventually be useful, or when you may need to call on somebody. And building those relationships gives you the ability to make that call both ways. I know if I ever need to call Terrell, he'll be there, and he knows that if he ever needs to call me, I'll be there for him as well.
Man, Bill, I appreciate it.
Of course.
I appreciate it.